coming to you loud and clear from our safe and germ-free homes and on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, filling in for Tom Clark. And as always, we're here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. As usual, Zorba, we got a few topics to talk about today.
Yes, we're going to talk about COVID and anxiety and exactly what that means, what we really find, and some research on that. And we're also going to talk about eye care, cataracts, dry eyes, and I'm going to talk about that based on my personal experience.
Aha. Uh-huh. And what is our special recipe today?
Baked feta with olives and cherry tomatoes. I've been a love feta. Anytime I can have a recipe that has feta in it, I think, good. And we'll be doing this, of course, from Tom Clark's legendary, famous, over-the-top kitchen, where only Tom can prepare something like that. Because, you know, when it comes to Tom and cooking, it's Tom and cooking.
That's right. 800-462-7413 is the number to call, where you can leave a voicemail anytime with your question for Zorba. And then stay tuned. You might hear yourself on an upcoming episode of the show. That's 800-462-7413. And like you said, Zorba, I'm happy to announce later in the show, we're going to hear from Tom Clark in his gloriously well-appointed kitchen for the recipe segment. Chef Tom.
And you know something? When we talk about Tom's kitchen, we're talking about Tom's kitchen.
That's right. Not to be confused with Tom's diner, actually.
Not at all.
All right. We've been combing through the many, many voicemails. Many, many voicemails listeners have left us, and thank you for that. Let's kick things off with a caller in Knoxville, Tennessee.
I just was listening to your program, and it's talking about kids' education. Talk about limiting the 2 hours of screen time. What's the definition of screen time, and how does that fit with where they're doing virtual learning? They're obviously on the computer quite a bit more than 2 hours. Anyway, I would appreciate that response. It was unclear to me what screen time meant.
Yeah, you know something. That's exactly right. You know, we've been talking about screen time, limiting your kids for screen time because they should be out playing. They should not be out playing with others. They, of course, should be, you know, going and doing stuff that kids do all the time. And all of a sudden, bang, COVID comes in. And when we're talking about screen time, we're talking about things like screen time with school. Because,
right.
I mean, who would have thought, right, Carl?
Yeah.
Who would have thought years ago that all of a sudden our kids would be at home all the time?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got two kids at home. I'm sure. What are they doing?
They are on the screen quite a bit more than we used to have them. That's for sure.
And you know, when we're talking about screen time, I think we're really talking about putting your kids, let's put homework aside for a minute. It's putting your kids in front of the screen to sort of babysit them. And I think the point of that, and of course, during this time of COVID, we have to define it differently, but I think we're talking about interaction. And here's the important thing about interaction. When you read to your child, and you're talking to your child when they're younger, back and forth, you're interacting with your child. And when it comes to screen time, if you're interacting with them on the screen, like they're in a Zoom call with their teacher, like you're interacting with them on a tablet and you're discussing a book, because a lot of books are on tablets now, that's different than simply putting in the electronic babysitter. And the reason is we now know passive learning is not the same as active learning. And that's kind of our challenge when we're, you know, when we're parents. So the answer is screen time is really screen time where they're not doing very much. It does not include screen time in school. And who would have thought that screen time would be virtual like this? But frankly, it's virtual until it isn't virtual. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, like I said, our kids are both home, we're working. And so it's really tempting always to just kind of throw them in front of a screen when we need to get some work done. But you're basically saying that, you know, the screen time limits that we've all discussed in the past are kind of out the window now because everything's virtual.
Oh, right. And frankly, you know, we did the same thing with our four kids. If we had to get dinner on the table, we'd put Sesame Street. We really watched it and made sure that it was important that we knew exactly what they were doing. And my kids remember if I happened to come home and they were watching TV, we had it in a cabinet, they would immediately shut the door because they knew I was so anti-TV. But there's a reason behind it. I was a TV addict. I still remember. Huh. I'd come home from school. I'd have Hostess cream-filled cupcakes, two of them with a glass of milk, and watch The Three Stooges on television. And I'd watch it all the way through the night. And my parents never read. I come from a family of non-readers. Television in the 50s was the only thing we did. And when I was 19 years old, I'll never forget, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm sitting there. This is back in the day when I was a smoker. I'm smoking cigarettes. I'm a freshman in college. I came home and at 2 o'clock in the morning, I had realized I had no idea what I had just watched on TV. Huh. I'd been like 6 to 8 hours and I was sitting there. I said, I can't do this anymore. This is not a good life. And I remember getting up, turning off the TV, and basically I walked out of a room for about the next 10 or 15 years if the TV was on because I knew I was addicted.
Cold and turkey on the TV. Wow.
It's important. It's important. We got to know what our kids are watching. So I hope that answered the question.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's keep the calls rolling in, Zorba. Let's hear now from a listener in... This is where I pause and pretend to say the state, but it's trivia time, actually, Zorba. We're going to do trivia again. All right. I know you love it.
Okay, give me a hint. United States.
You're getting really warm. You're warm. I'm going to give you go ahead. Keep guessing.
East Coast, eastern part of the U.S.
Nope. Should I give you some clues that I've had written down in front of me?
Clues. Okay. Give me some clues.
How about three fun facts from this caller's state?
Okay.
All right. First fun fact. These are fun. Dr. Pepper was invented here in this state.
Okay.
Does that help? Nope.
not in the least. I don't drink Dr. Pepper.
Okay. You're a Red Bull guy. That's right. We learned that.
I'm Red Bull all the way.
All right. In 1980, Whole Foods was founded there. That's interesting, right?
Yes. Still doesn't help me, but go ahead.
Third fun fact. Maybe this is more of a giveaway. We'll see. The official state dish, like the state food dish, I guess.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's a big bowl of hot chili.
Ohio. Is it in Ohio? Cincinnati, Ohio?
Yeah, that's
Cincinnati,
a good
Ohio?
Guess. It's actually Texas. Texas.
Oh, Texas. Is not in Ohio.
It's not.
And Ohio is not in Texas. There's no connection. But Texas, but so Cincinnati, which I've been to numerous times, is really big on chili. And
they
that's
are.
Why I mentioned that.
They're
so.
Famous for chili.
All right,
that's right.
Texas. Well, I failed. All
that
right.
was kind of funny. They have a
oh,
state
Oh, right. Austin,
dish.
Texas. Yeah. Whole Foods. Got it.
You got it. Yeah. And so I started looking up like every dish or every state has a state dish or food. Guess what the Wisconsin, we don't have a state dish, but what's the Wisconsin state pastry? Can you guess that?
The pasty?
Nope. I'll give you another hint. It looks like a toilet seat.
Looks like a toilet seat. You mean like a donut?
Kringle. The Kringle.
A Kringle. Kringle does not look like a toilet seat.
You don't think
a donut
so?
Looks, big... A donut looks like a toilet seat.
All right. We should get to this call. This has gone too long.
Jeez.
All right. So let's hear from that caller in Texas.
I would like to get Dr. Zorba input on hypertension. Which doctor should we depend on? DO, MD, or PA? And what's the best medicine for African American to control that blood pressure with? Thank you.
Excellent point. Blood pressure pills actually are different for different ethnic groups. So there's certain medications that do not work on African Americans to lower their blood pressure and their stroke risk. And African Americans are, on the whole, at a higher stroke risk than Caucasians. And Caucasians, especially Caucasians that come from Western Europe, are at a heart attack rate risk than African Americans. So the first thing there are a list. If you Google African-American blood pressure medications to avoid, you'll really have a list of those. And I always think that's the best way to do it. And I'll tell you why. I can mention at least one or two medications that you should avoid. But the fact is, the real issue is you want to know which drugs are going to work for your blood pressure. So you want to get a complete list. So you want to Google that. But the second thing that I think is even more important is you want your blood pressure under control. And that means generally between around 120 over 80, if you're an older American over 65, probably 130, 135 over 85. And about 25 to 30% of the people are not controlled on their blood pressure medicines. Why is that? Well, they're reticent to take a second pill or a third pill. And often as you get older, you need that second or third pill. So bottom line is, Google African American blood pressure pills to avoid, and you will get a complete list of which ones. And number two, if you've got high blood pressure, make sure you get it checked out and make sure it works. And if you really want to go that second step, go and buy one online. And I recommend the Omron, O-M-R-O-N. Omron blood pressure cuffs are really good. They cost about $35 or $40. You don't need a more expensive one. You can check your blood pressure at home, and that's going to give you better control of your high blood pressure. Hypertension. attention, since we started controlling it in the 1970s, we have dropped the stroke rate by 75%. It's hugely important, and the heart attack rate. But getting it right is also important.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. Leave a voicemail for Zorba. And we'll get back to those calls just a little bit here. But first, Zorba, let's get into our first topic of the day. So I saw this headline, and I was a little shocked by it. After getting a COVID-19 diagnosis, nearly 1 in 5 people are diagnosed with a mental disorder.
Well, you've got to look at where the data came from. And the data came from, first of all, Lancet Psychiatry. And what they did is they did a huge study. University of Oxford looked at electronic medical records of nearly 70 million people in the U.S. and more than 62,000 which were diagnosed with COVID-19. Then they looked through the COVID-19 records. And once again, these are in EMR records where the pertinent patient information data is not there. They can just look globally of what's going on. It's one of the great step forwards, for instance, with Epic, the electronic medical record that really is based in Verona, Wisconsin, which is right outside of Madison, Wisconsin. So you can do you can use what they call their slicer dicer, which allows you to look at huge amounts of data. And lo and behold, if you had COVID, you had roughly a 1 in 5 chance that you actually would have a diagnosis of either depression or anxiety or some other mental disorder related to that. But then if you didn't have COVID, there also was an increase in generalized anxiety disorders. So more so if you have COVID, but definitely if you didn't have COVID, there also was a jump in psychiatric diagnosis. And why? Pretty obvious why. Obviously why. Look where we are. I mean, we're in our house. We're not seeing our friends. I'm sure you miss seeing your friends, Carl, and being with them, right?
I do, but yeah, definitely do. Yeah, this is a tough time for sure.
Well, and it's a tough time, especially if people are alone. I mean, you've got a wife, you've got kids. They may be off the wall. I mean, the kids, obviously, not your wife. Sorry, just the kids. But the fact is, you've got somebody else. What if you don't? What if you're in a terrible relationship? What if you have depression or you have borderline depression or anxiety? And I think the important issues here are that if you feel like you need help, if you feel like you're anxious, if you feel like you're depressed, call your healthcare provider, set up a visit either in person or a televisit, and consider medications. And frankly, antidepressants work really, really well for generalized anxiety disorder. And so I think that's really a very important thing that people ought to consider if they think they're having a problem during the, this kind of time of COVID. COVID is going to end. Immunizations are going to happen. But frankly, folks, it's a long time before we're actually going to see the results of herd immunity and immunization. We're talking about months and months and months.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413 is the number to call. Leave a voicemail for the show. And back to those voicemails now. Let's hear from a caller in Missouri.
Hi. I had a question regarding eyesight. My optometrist, I believe, told me, because my eyesight has been changing recently, and I'm also transgender, and he said that my eyesight could be worsening because of my testosterone that I'm taking. And I don't think that is accurate. What do you think? Thank you. Bye.
Good point. So right off the shelf, first of all, if you're seeing an optometrist versus an ophthalmologist, there's a difference. So an ophthalmologist is medically trained, and optometrists are trained. They do a great job with glasses, wonderful job with glasses. And they also are great in terms of what they understand. But on the other hand, I have no idea where you would see that testosterone would all of a sudden change your eyesight. And in fact, if it does, eyesight changes with age, and it changes in a stepwise fashion. It's not a smooth fashion. So all of a sudden people will say, gee, I just got a glass prescription and my eyes changed 6 months ago. And that might happen for 1 or 2 or 3 years, then all of a sudden it stabilizes. So I don't think you can really blame this on testosterone at all, and I would argue against it. And if so, I would say, well, where's the scientific data? Where's the study that really showed that transgender people who take testosterone are more likely to have eyesight changes? And then the other question is, okay, what difference does that make? You're transgender, you're taking testosterone. If your eyesight changes and that's a side effect, Okay, it's a side effect. We know for sure there are enough transgender people who have taken testosterone to know that you're not damaging your eye. So you might need different glasses, but I am sure that as far as I know, there is no evidence you're actually doing any permanent damage to your eye if you're taking testosterone. And by the way, we would also know that with men who take testosterone, I have a patient in my practice who actually had mumps as an adult, wiped out totally his testes. And he's been on testosterone for years without side effects at all. It is a testosterone replacement. And I've never, ever heard that there's any problem with him, nor have I heard for other people who are on injectable testosterone for orchiectomies. That is, they've had to have their testicles removed for other reasons. So I think the optometrist is wrong, and you are right to question that.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Before we take a break, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite backseat drivers and do-gooders, the Grammar Police. Oh no, it's the Grammar Police. All right, Zorba, a listener named Deirdre from Verona, Wisconsin, sent us the following email. Dear Zorba, I was thrilled to hear your misuse of the word unique on this week's show, as this error is a pet peeve of mine. You said something was, quote, very unique.
Uh-huh.
Unique means one of a kind.
And
something either is or is not one of a kind. So to modify the word unique with very is inaccurate, as something cannot be very one of a kind.
Now, in reality, this listener is wrong. It was not my misuse of the word unique. It was the misuse of my word very. So there you go. I used very wrong. I used unique correctly.
Well, Deirdre goes on here. Deirdre, there's more to it, I think, here. The phrase very unique is often used to mean highly unusual, but that usage is not grammatically correct. Uh-huh. The word unique is often misused in this way, and I must admit I am never thanked. Imagine that. I am never thanked for pointing it out to others.
Never thanked in the middle of a set, in the middle of a conversation. Hey, you're using the wrong word. I'm shocked. I would expect that she should have been thanked all along.
Deirdre goes on. My sister and I once had a heated discussion about it that ended with her saying, quote, you're uniquely irritating, which I hope isn't true, but it may be.
No. That's maybe it. She's very uniquely irritating. Maybe that was wrong.
How many times do people get corrected and then, you know, are thanked for that correction? I don't think that happens very often.
You know, once out of a million, there's always some time it happens.
Do you think Zorba perhaps misspoke on the show? Well, you wouldn't be unique or one of a kind. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more of your calls to come, more of your emails as well. And Zorba and local celebrity chef Tom Clark will be cooking up some baked feta in Tom's cozy kitchen. All that is coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Now, we know you don't just listen to the show for Zorba's healthy living advice. You also show up to see what Chef Tom is cooking up in his impressive menu. So let's head over to Tom Clark's kitchen, where Zorba and Tom are working on a delicious recipe for baked feta with olives and cherry tomatoes.
Thanks, Carl. Sounds really good. Zorba,
Well, of course it sounds good. Do we ever have anything that doesn't sound good? I mean, give me a break.
How about last week?
How about last week? I mean, I know the tofu recipes are just not that good. I mean, we've been discussing tofu for decades, but still, every time we talk about tofu, all you do is go, tofu, bad. But this recipe does not have tofu.
Okay, we'll do it. Carl will be back. Don't worry. He ducked out for a cheeseburger and French fries. So he will return.
A cheeseburger and French fries. In other words, that's what the producer of this show does. Nothing heart healthy. Go for the gold.
Let's do our recipe.
Now, I have a question for you. Do you like olives? When you're at a restaurant, who goes to a restaurant?
I'm not a big olive fan.
How about tomatoes?
Yeah, tomatoes fine.
How about feta cheese? Do you like the taste of feta cheese?
Good, yeah.
This is baked feta with olives and cherry tomatoes. So, okay, we're going to start out with a half cup of extra virgin olive oil.
Half cup extra virgin olive oil.
What kind of olive oils do you have in your kitchen?
whatever is on the TV dinner is what I have.
That's exactly it. A quarter cup of lemon juice, that's roughly a juice of two lemons, and it's got to be fresh juice. It really can't be reconstituted juice.
Quarter cup lemon juice.
6 ounces of feta cut into chunks. Now, you can buy feta already in chunks, but feta is really better if you buy it sort of in a block. It tastes better, and then you cut it into chunks. Either way, it's good, but if you cut it into chunks, it's better. Half pint of cherry tomatoes, halved.
Half a pint cherry tomatoes, half.
I'm hungry already looking at this. 1.5 cups of green olives pitted. So obviously you're not going to pit them. You buy, pitted green olives. 1.5 cups. 1/2 teaspoon of crushed red pepper flakes. You know, the kind of red pepper flakes that you get on pizza. Do you eat pizza?
Oh, yeah.
Do you put pepper on it, those chili flakes?
Yeah,
I do. That's the kind you're going to use. And 4 garlic cloves peeled and smashed down.
4 garlic cloves peeled and smashed.
So here's how we do it. Preheat the oven. You have to have an oven. You have to have a working oven, Tom. You have to have an oven.
It's right below the microwave.
That's right. That's the main oven. Preheat the oven at 350 degrees. Then in a measuring cup, whisk together the olive oil and lemon juice. Whisk it together. Then in a baking dish, add the feta chunks, cherry tomatoes, green olives, crushed red pepper, garlic cloves, and pour the olive oil and lemon mixture over it, okay, that you did before. Toss the whole thing to combine it. Transfer it to the oven for about 30 minutes until the cherry tomatoes have wilted slightly and everything really smells wonderfully flagrant. And then serve it warm, maybe with some nice slices of bread. And you have a wonderful, wonderful baked feta with olives and cherry tomatoes.
Can I leave out the olives?
Yes, you can. Actually, it tastes pretty good leaving out the olives. But you can't leave out the feta.
So if I want a copy of this recipe,
you can go to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And you can get that recipe. And what's more important is you can see Tom's picture. You can see your picture.
What a treat.
On the web. That's exactly it. That's ZorbaPastor.org or through Facebook.
Yeah. Well, here's Carl coming. So we can say so long to each other, and you and Carl continue from here.
Yeah, but you know what? When we say so long to each other, isn't there a song we're supposed to sing? Do you know what the song is?
No, what is it?
Happy days are here until we meet again. Remember that? It was Roy Rogers.
Was it?
I think it was Roy Rogers. You know, with Trigger? No, it wasn't. Was it Trigger? I don't know. Those were the days.
Well, you and Carl have to do your thing, so I'm going to take off.
Okay. Take care, Tom.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tom. 800-462-7413 is the number to call. That's 1-800-462-7413. And let's hear from a caller now in Zionsville, Indiana.
My question is, I know 3M is a great company making the N95 masks, but I know they have added more capability to produce more, but what makes them particularly effective? First question. And second, why is that so much harder to make? Those are my questions I never have answered. Just that they're trying to make more doesn't quite answer that. Anyway, thanks. Have a great day.
So when we essentially look at the transmission of disease, we're looking at what sort of a veil, if you will, that really goes over our nose or mouth in order to keep from spewing out viral particles, if you will, and bringing in viral particles. And when you look at an N95 mask, it's basically manufactured in such a way that the mesh is small enough to keep viral particles and bacterial particles from going out. Now, traditionally in our office, we have always been fitted with N95 masks once a year. This is pre-COVID. And what they do is they put us in this little kind of portable chamber over our head, and they actually spray in a smell. Okay, it's a smell, and it's a stinky smell. So first of all, you smell the stinky smell. You don't have your mask on. Can you smell it? And if the answer is yes, then you take off that particular sort of a little headdress that goes on top of it. And then what they do is you put the N95 on, and then you put this cover over your head, and they spray it in again, and you can't smell a thing. You can't smell it. Now, if you think about the regular masks when you're walking around, either the mask made out of cloth or even the masks that are surgical masks, you could smell anything that's out there. With an N95, you can't smell anything. So it's the way the mask is manufactured to keep really even finer, the finest particles away from you. And that's why they're harder to do. And they're very good to really keep those fine particles away when you're in the construction industry. So hard to manufacture, more expensive, hard to get, the best there is.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And let's keep the voicemails coming. Here's a caller in Jacksonville, Florida.
I have a question about going through cancer and chemo where my hair has come out, but it's coming back in some areas, and in some areas it's really not coming back. Wanted to see what you thought could help it come back towards the middle of my head and the middle and the back portion of my head. Thank you. Bye now.
Give it some time. Give it some time. Hair follicles are very strange little creatures, and they shut off with chemotherapy. They shut off with other things like stress, and then they wake up, and when they're going to wake up, kind of you have to ask each individual follicle when it's going to do its thing. So the best things you can do in the meantime is good nutrition, making sure that you have plenty of fruits and vegetables, well-balanced diet, not too much in the way of carbs, fish a couple of days a week, those things that you would really do sort of that you would expect. A Mediterranean diet is still always the king of diets and the best diet. Regular exercise on a regular basis. Once again, that's really going to help. That's going to push up the really, if you will, the hormones in your body that are useful that actually help with healing. Once again, if you're on other medications, talk to your doctor or talk to your pharmacist and make sure the other medications do not interfere with hair regrowth. And over time, usually all of the hair in your scalp will wake up and come back in and make you look good. Now, one thing I want to tell you, quite often after chemotherapy, women will say, you know, my hair came back, but it looks different. I've got more wave, or I've got less wave, or look at the color, or look at the way it's coming back. But everyone after chemo who has a good hair is really happy to get it back. It just is a matter of time.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call anytime and leave a voicemail for Dr. Zorba. And Zorba, we get so many calls from wonderful listeners and so many great questions, but we also get those calls from helpful listeners who offer up their own comments or sometimes their health tips. So let's take some time now.
And their opinions.
Yep. So let's take some time now to hear a few of these calls in a segment called Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips.
We do. Right, Zorba? We appreciate it?
Of course. manna from heaven. That's what we say. Manna from heaven. Really, we really do appreciate them. I always appreciate the comments. The ones I agree with, the ones I disagree with, the good and the bad. It really helps us make this show a great show. So keep the comments coming.
All right. First up, Zorba, let's hear from a caller in Wisconsin.
Hi. Regarding TV commercials, it really doesn't matter for what. So many of them say, call the number on your screen. I don't know if they realize that makes anyone with a visual difficulty unable to partake of what they're trying to sell. Could you think you could help spread that word and make them be a little more kind to those of us who can't?
I do have an idea. Call your local TV station, because if it's a local TV station, and talk to somebody at the TV station, because it's possible that you can actually, there are different things they do for people who have visual difficulties and hearing difficulties, and it might be possible for you actually to get some way of hearing the number, and your local station, if this is on regular commercial local TV, may give you the answer.
800-462-7413. Let's hear some more comments. Here is a caller in Albion, New York.
I just heard the woman who has the dark chocolate headache, and I'm calling to say me too. I could feel a migraine coming on. Mine started visually with a vision distortion. However, I discovered, this is after like 40 years of wondering what caused it, if I have a piece of chocolate and I keep a small chocolate bar in my refrigerator, it stops it dead in its tracks. I take no medication. I eat an extremely healthy diet, no sugar, bake all our own bread. We don't eat out of a box. We eat out of our garden. So I could never figure out what the trigger was, but now I know what stops it. Thank you.
Migraines are very interesting. There are different things that trigger it, and for some people, different things that make it better. Now, chocolate contains something called a theophylline compound. Theophyllines are related to caffeine. We know that caffeines often will stop migraines. We also know people with migraines who drink lots of coffee, often when they stop their coffee, it gives them a migraine. So a little caffeine works, and a lot of migraine may not or may withdraw. And obviously, it may be the same way with chocolate. And you know what? Be nice to have a chocolate bar right now. I got to go into my home refrigerator and take some out.
800-462-7413. Finally, Zorba, let's hear from a caller in the Bronx, New York.
I have an observation, not a question, which is that falling asleep or falling back asleep seems to be helped very much by rolling onto your stomach and having a pillow under your, sort of holding up your head so you're not squashed. And I think you're breathing in more CO2, so it always works like a charm to get to sleep. Thank you.
You know, people sleep in different ways. Some people sleep on their back, some people on their side. How do you go to sleep, or does it matter to you?
I feel like it's weird. I think I sleep on my back, but then I'll wake up, you know, in the middle of the night and I'm on my side. And I don't, you know, I think it's just a, who knows? A potpourri of sleep positions, I think.
Well, you hit it right. I never fall asleep on my back. Never, ever. And in fact, when I fractured my ankle and I had to fall asleep on my back for about 6 weeks, I had to take something every night because my ankle had to be in a certain position post-surgery, and I could never do it. So I'm a side sleeper. A stomach okay, but I'm really a side sleeper. My wife, Penny, can sleep, I think, in any position at all. I've never noticed she prefers one position versus another. I don't know if it's due to oxygen, but I know one thing, it's individualized.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Lots of great comments from callers, and we'll be hearing more of your questions throughout the show. Thanks for those comments. But before we take a break, Zorba, we always appreciate our listeners posting on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. So time again for Facebook feedback.
Facebook feedback.
All right, Zorba, this is going to be a Facebook feedback double shot. You ready for a double shot?
I am always ready for a double shot.
All right. These questions came to us from listeners Jill and Jane. And not to be confused with the Dick and Jane books. Remember See Dick Run?
Or Jack and Jill.
Or Jack and
Jill.
I
do remember.
Did you read those books in elementary school, the Dick and Jane books?
I did. Did you?
I think they were on their way out maybe when I was in school, but I'd see them in the library, like dusty old Dick and Jane books.
Oh, Dick and Jane, See Spot Run, Run Spot Run. I mean, those are the first things I ever, that's how we learned how to read.
Yep.
And, you know, I maybe we should have called our poodle Spot. The problem is he has no spots. He's just a standard black-haired poodle. It wouldn't have worked.
All right, Jill. First up, Jill writes, "Hi, Zorba. Is taking a teaspoon of extra virgin olive oil on an empty stomach a good idea every day for regularity.
Sometimes oil really does help with regularity. There was an old-fashioned laxative called Haley's MO, very, very popular back in the 70s. MO stand for magnesium. O was for basically for mineral oil, which is a neutral oil. So, yeah, you want to take some oil and it helps your bowels, go for it if it works.
All right, and let's hear from Jane, who writes, does using a neti pot to clear nasal passages have a beneficial effect on avoiding COVID?
No, has no effect on avoiding COVID at all. We avoid COVID by masking up, socially distancing, washing our hands, staying away from other people and other indoor activities, limiting the amount of shopping that we do. All those things avoid COVID. A neti pot does not get rid of COVID. Not at all.
Thanks for all the Facebook comments. And again, our Facebook page is the best place to find the latest from Zorba surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic. And don't forget, you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more of your calls coming up. We have another topic to discuss. And Zorba's going to be answering more of your emails, of course. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number to call, where anytime you can leave a voicemail for Zorba. Then stay tuned. You just might hear yourself on the show. But before we hear from more of our listeners, Zorba, you recently had a surgery.
I did. So I went to my eye doctor. Oh, this is just a while ago. And the optician, first thing the optician, before I see the eye physician, they're checking your eyes and say, is there anything wrong? And I looked at my left eye and I thought, left eye looks fine. And then I looked at my right eye and I said, you know, my right eye is hazy. Now, the funny thing about this is I had never really noticed my right eye was hazy. Hmm. You know, sure enough, went in, eye doctor said, you've got a cataract.
Huh.
Well, that's what I said. And I had sort of the inkling of a cataract, but over a 1 year period, it was there. So I thought, okay, I'm going to have surgery. I am not going to look on YouTube. I know what the surgery is. I've read about it, but I'm not going to look on YouTube before the surgery because I, like everyone else, I kind of freaked out. Somebody working on my eye and I got to look at them.
Right.
Working on the eye, but that isn't the case. What happens is go into the surgical center. They give you some fentanyl, something called Versed. They put eye drops in your eye. You don't know what's going on at all. Hmm. And kind of in the middle of it, you're really half awake. You're not totally asleep. You know, and the eye doctor says, move a little bit left, move right. And you can't see anything because they put something on top of the eye. It must be a liquid in the eye. So, you know, though he's working on it, I can't see a thing. So the next morning, I have to go back and take off the patch that's on the eye. And the first thing I notice when I take it off is the color of the hair of the nurse who told me to take it off. It's this bright red, and I can see the texture of how she combed her hair. And I thought, oh, my God, I have been missing this for years. In other words, my lens might have been a little bit yellowed for years. Hmm. And then I looked at my good eye, which was my left eye, and I thought, you know, my good eye is okay, but it's not as good as my new right eye. And so that night, you know, I forgot my friend Dan had taken me to the eye doctor, and I forgot the patches. You have to put a patch on your eye to make sure you don't actually touch your eye for a week or two. And so I had to go and drive. And I knew that I was allowed to drive. And so I borrowed my wife Penny's car and I'm driving to get some patches. And I'm going down the country road because we live in the country. And I said, oh my God, her lights are so much better in her car than in my car. And as I'm thinking about it, I thought, I don't think her lights are better. It's my eyes that are better. And all of a sudden it was like, boom, I could see more in the dark.
Wow.
So I highly recommend it. But there's something else that I learned about this that I think is very important. As we get older, but no matter what our age, our eyes are dry. When we look at a computer all day, we don't blink enough. Our eyes are dry. So I highly recommend that at least twice a day, if not more, twice a day, you get some lubricating eye drops. Ask your pharmacist if you don't know. You don't want Visine. Visine has a decongestant in it to get rid of redness. You don't want an eye drop that says it'll get rid of redness. You want to put a lubricating eye drop in your eye, and then you want to cover it with a compress. And these are compresses that you put in the microwave and warm the eye. And you want to do that for 4 minutes. 4 minutes, 3 to 4 times a day, but at least twice a day. 3 to 4 times a day for me because I had cataract surgery. But you put these wonderful things. They cost about $10. You put it in the microwave for 30 seconds. They keep your eye warm. And what they do, they moisturize. They encourage tears in your eye. And that, along with the drops, can really make a difference in your vision. And I started doing that a year before, and my eyes have actually much better, and they feel much better. Now, do your eyes ever feel dry, Carol?
Not dry, no, but I have recently, I bought these glasses that take the blue, because I'm, you know, I'm looking at a screen all day when I'm working. So I bought these glasses that basically take the blue light out of out of the screen. And do you think those are, I mean, I haven't difference. Do you think there's anything to it?
I would definitely try and see what it is. You know, it's how your brain concentrates, and it may be changing some of the blue light makes a difference. If it doesn't, I would go and get one of these compresses and put that on a couple of times a day, because when you stare at a screen, you don't blink like you do normally when you stare at people.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. That's the number to call if you'd like to leave a question for Zorba anytime. And let's get back to those questions. This is a voicemail from a caller in Spokane, Washington.
Question is, can microwave ovens kill the COVID virus? Thank you.
Can microwave ovens kill the COVID virus? I would think so. I'm not 100% sure on that, by the way. I would speculate and think so, because you're putting heat to the virus, and viruses don't like heat. So I certainly would say yes. If you've got COVID on your food and you put it in the microwave oven, I can't imagine the virus is going to survive, especially since we know that just washing your hands gets rid of the COVID virus, and just washing your fruits and vegetables. I would say yes, microwave ovens definitely would kill the COVID virus. And once again, I haven't checked the CDC on that, but I'm really sure that's the case. Because heat, that's why hot foods, you know, foods that we boil in heat, get rid of viral infections and bacterial infections. So, yeah, good question.
Nuke the COVID.
Nuke the COVID. Although it doesn't use nuclear energy.
That's a slang use of the word nuke.
Yeah, nuke. Yep. Definitely slang. I wonder if the grammar police are going to pick up on that. You know, we don't have the slang police. I mean, they could be a subgroup of the grammar police.
They're called the slang fuzz, actually.
You got it. I like it.
800-462.
Show business. There's a place for you in show business.
Look, I'm wearing these glasses now. I took the blue out. Can you see these things? Listeners at home can't see that.
Yeah, you look a little dorky.
Thanks.
Dorky. Welcome.
All right. Well, I don't see any blue light. 800-462-7413. That's the number to call anytime. And let's do that segment, Zorba, where you get yelled at for something you said on the show. This is Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
All right, Zorba. This email came to us from a listener named Bob, who lives in Milwaukee. Bob says, "Hi, Dr. Zorba and Mr. Tom. I really enjoy your show.
It sounds like a kid's show. And now, Mr. Tom.
Come on, Mr.
Tom. I don't think
Tom.
It's ever been called Mr. Tom, but I like it."
Bob says, "I really enjoy your show." And don't they always start out nice like that, Zorba, these disagreeing with the doc letters?
Of course. Well, that's because they're civil. Public radio people are civil.
"I really enjoy your show. However, I need a clarification about something you said on the show. You made the comment, quote, 'If you haven't heard of Facebook, you are rumpled stiltskin.' Remember saying that?"
Well, yes. I know the answer to the question, but please go on.
Okay, Bob says, I'm curious, are you saying that someone who hasn't heard of Facebook is an ugly little imp?
No.
Don't you think that's rather an unfair indictment?
That's right. That's right.
Or
go ahead.
I'll keep going. This is just Bob's got a lot to say about this one. Or perhaps you meant someone who, in a rage, drives their right foot so far into the ground that it sank in up to the waist, then in a passion seized their left foot with both hands and tore themselves in two. So are you advertising your services, Zorba? Bob goes on. Or maybe you were referring to someone who drives their right foot so far in the ground that they created a chasm and fell into it, never to be seen again, or flies out of the window on a cooking ladle. These are all Rumpelstiltskin endings, Bob says. He knows a lot about Rumpelstiltskin. So Bob says, can you please clarify? Oh, and by the way, I've heard of Facebook, so thank goodness I'm not a Rumpelstiltskin.
You know, what I actually meant, I had the wrong fairy tale. I meant Rip Van Winkle.
Oh, okay, there it is.
I didn't mean Rumpelstiltskin. But you're right. Rumpelstiltskin, when they guessed the name and didn't have to give it their child, did a lot of stuff, but I had no idea he did that much. So thank you for giving me that information.
Do you disagree with the good doc? Well, before you declare this the last straw, consider posting your grievance on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Gosh, that guy knew a lot about Rumpelstiltskin. Back to your calls at 800-462-7413. This is a caller from Texarkana, Arkansas.
Hello. I'm curious on what Dr. Zorba thinks of low-carb, high-fat for the treatment and reversal of type 2 diabetes.
Well, anything that gets you to lose weight is going to help with diabetes. And we know that diabetics have more trouble with carbohydrates. So I think going to a more low-carb diet makes a difference. I think if you go on a low-carb, high-fat diet and you lose weight, you may normalize your blood sugar by doing that because you've got to limit the number of carbs. But more importantly, you're losing the amount of weight. That accompanied with exercise may indeed work. A lot of people who lose weight on that kind of a diet actually do control their diabetes. Either they get rid of their medicine or they're on less medicine or their hemoglobin A1C is simply better. So if it works for you, go for it.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's hear now from a caller in Virginia.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. I'm a 27-year-old male from Virginia, and I'm hoping you can help with some symptoms I've been having. For the past several years, I've had brain fog, headaches, dizziness, blurred vision, and dark eye floaters. I also have fullness in my ears, find myself getting tongue-tied very easily, and have a hard time focusing. The symptoms seem to come on at random multiple times a week, and they last for several days at a time, too. I've seen numerous doctors, including neurologists, ophthalmologists, and ENTs, all of whom can't find any cause or medications that help. I've had physical exams, blood work, CT scans, x-rays, an EEG test, and a VNG balance test. The only test I haven't done is a neuropsychological evaluation, which isn't covered by insurance and costs several thousand dollars locally. The only abnormalities they could find were elevated liver enzymes and slight stomach inflammation. The neurologist believes it could possibly be migraines, but she exhausted treatment options after a number of medications had no effect. Are there any diet or lifestyle changes that could help with these symptoms or any alternative therapies that you would recommend? Thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to hearing from you if possible.
Wow. Talk about something that can really be bothersome. You can just imagine. So here you have this guy. He's gone to numerous doctors, you know, neurologists, a whole bunch of different people, and actually he's had a complete workup. There are a few things that sort of strike me here. First of all, we know that medicine doesn't have all the answers yet. I mean, it's technology. Look at, for instance, COVID, how much we learned about COVID from 9 months ago to now. You know, look at the race to the vaccine, what we know about the RNA of COVID and so on. So, you know, technology doesn't answer all of these questions. Once again, migraines, very, very good idea that it could be migraines. And the neurologist obviously looked at a number of medications for migraines. That's the first thing I would think about. The other thing I would think about is an antidepressant, not necessarily because the person is depressed, but antidepressants do other things. They really affect the dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin systems, and they can make a difference there. So I would try a couple of different antidepressants. I'd try an SSRI. SSRI antidepressant, which is like Prozac or Paxil. If that didn't work, I'd try an old-fashioned antidepressant called Trazodone to take at bedtime, or Doxepin at bedtime, to see if that worked. And if not, I would try a third one, Venlafaxine or Duloxetine, which is called an SNRI antidepressant. And I would try these. They're safe to use. And I would just see whether or not that would make a difference. Those are the things I would try. I don't think, you've tried for a diagnosis. It's not going to happen. A neuropsych diagnosis is not going to give you much either. The other possibility also is to look at an ADHD medication such as a Concerta and see if a low-dose Concerta, which is a long-acting methylphenidate, can really make a difference, and see if that just works. Because we know that people with ADD can, you don't have ADHD because you're not hyperactive, can manifest in a variety of symptoms. So that's what I would do. I would look to trying different treatment modalities. The workup has been exhaustive. You're not going to find anything else. I wouldn't spend my money on neuropsych testing. I would just head down that corridor like I recommended.
So there's not another specialist or anything you would recommend?
I would just try medications. I would say, hey, we've exhausted it. You've had a complete workup. I mean, you can always go to a place like Mayo Clinic and get another one, but then you've got insurance issues. No, I would try these variety of antidepressants or an ADD med and see if that would work. The other thing is sometimes things come and go. They come and last for a few years and they go. We don't understand them because, frankly, in medicine, it's trial and error.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime with your question. That's 800-462-7413. But before we head out today, Zorba, let's reach into the Zorba Pastor On Your Health email bag and pull out a listener email. This email comes to us from a listener named Mike, who writes, "Hi, Zorba. Great show. Tom missed a great line opportunity on today's broadcast. During the cooking segment, you asked Tom if he was a fast cook or a slow cook. Of course, the proper response would have been, quote, 'I'm kind of in between. I'm really a half-fast cook.'" It's pretty good. It's pretty good, Mike.
Pretty good. Yes, pretty good. I would definitely say so.
Zorba, are you fast, slow? Where are you with cooking?
I'm going to leave that sit.
Okay. Thanks for the great line, Mike. It's a good one. And listeners, if you have something to add to the show, just post it on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Maybe see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Carl.
If you miss anything during the show, or you just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org, or of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave us your question at 800-462-7413. And like I said earlier, please do visit the Zorba Pastor On Your Health Facebook page for Zorba's frequent coronavirus updates. Zorba Pastor On Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. And for Zorba Pastor and Tom Clark, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor On Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.